Hello and welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave, I'm here with Joel and Tony, and today we're talking about Star Wars. Star Wars The Last Jedi and its director Rian Johnson and the response this movie has gotten. Star Wars movies, of course, are very popular. We have them here at the library. We have soundtracks. We have books. We have all sorts of things Star Wars related. But we're talking about the new movie specifically that came out in December, The Last Jedi. So, guys, what did you think of Star Wars The Last Jedi?
Yeah, I mean, spoiler alert. I'll just say that right now. But there's a lot to be excited about in this movie. Like, if you haven't seen it, I kind of just recommend going and seeing it and then listening to this podcast, because we'll probably go into detail with some of the actual adventures that they go on. Mm-hmm. In tone, I feel like it reminds me of Empire Strikes Back. There's like this urgency, there's like running, there's this fear, but then there's also just like lots of really beautiful scenery, beautiful moments, and it stays tethered to its characters the entire time. So in true Star Wars fashion, it delivers on a lot of fronts. The characters progress even from the last movie to this one, or from the last time you see Luke to now, you see a profound change in mm-hmm. a lot of these characters. So totally interesting and really action-packed, so much to the point where you don't realize, and I didn't realize it was a 2.5 hour long movie, like totally unconscious of that, mm-hmm. and then it ended, you know? So it had me totally absorbed, and I loved this movie, so.
Yeah, I'd like to tack on to that, where I thought that Force Awakens had a very much of a New Hope feel to it,
yeah.
and it's almost like they're following the blueprint, mm-hmm. but in the form of Star Wars, why not follow the blueprint? Because right. it worked.
Yeah. Right,
it's
right.
popular. It's great. And you're right. There's a lot of oppression. There's a lot of running. There's a lot of where do we go from here? And, you know, the hits just keep on coming. Mm-hmm. How can we survive this? What can we do? What can we do? I thought that was great. It was almost like watching a new version of the first trilogy again, mm-hmm. The second movie of the first yeah. trilogy. The character of Luke Skywalker himself, I've always been a bit not exactly partial to him. Like, I could have taken him or left him personally. Mm-hmm. But this movie really deepened his character a lot. Mm-hmm. And it made me a huge fan of Skywalker, mm-hmm. of Luke Skywalker. And I enjoyed the introspection, the not taking for granted of yeah. mm-hmm. the way things are. And maybe it's time for a shakeup of things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of original scenes to the movie that the director, Rian Johnson, I believe, envisaged and he put onto the screen,
yeah.
In particular, as things would happen in space. Because,
mm-hmm. yeah.
what was it, Alien said that in space no one can hear you scream
mm-hmm. right.
to cross genres. But with space, there's no sound. And I think in a scene in particular mm-hmm. that really struck me, mm-hmm. I loved. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fantastic, mm-hmm. the certain scene in Star Wars, The Last Jedi, mm-hmm. that showcased that.
Yeah. Well, and to speak to your point, it stays with tradition in the general tone, but then it tries to really just create and push boundaries. And in a way, I don't even think The Force Awakens did really. Like, for example, one of my favorite scenes that did that was it takes the idea of like the dark side and pairs it with this force planet that is, you know, where supposedly the Jedi, you know, maybe have their origins. There's like this cave, and the whole dark side journey is kind of like a trope also within Luke's hero's journey, where he's tempted by Vader and all there, has to fight, confront Vader in a dark cave. But I just loved the interpretation of that, because I thought it was new ground. I thought it was different. Rey doesn't have quite in the same way. She has a nemesis, but in this particular interpretation, it was like a mirror, and there was a lot of like questions and more questions, you know, left after the experience. So I don't know. I thought that that was just really creative, and I thought they went with creative angles for each of these like new obstacles that were presented in this one. So,
yeah, I think where The Force Awakens fell back on A New Hope, The Last Jedi pointed an eye forward at where can we go? What new things can we do? What new places can we explore? What new parts of the Force can we explore? And I thought that was a breath of fresh air, mm-hmm. at the very least, to have all these new ideas with these old characters. Because, I mean, now
possibilities.
Yeah, exactly. Luke and Leia are in this movie a lot, and Poe and Kylo and Rey are familiar now, as opposed to when we were being introduced to them in
Finn.
Force Awakens, and then right. Finn, of course. Mm-hmm. It was a little jarring, I think, to watch this movie and just be like, oh, I didn't know they could do that. Oh, I didn't expect this at all. Oh, I didn't, you know, this was a new movie, a new Star Wars movie, it felt mm-hmm. like. Mm-hmm. Whereas episodes 1 through 3 kind of stayed within the lines, and episode 7 just traced over A New Hope. I feel like this one broke the mold and tried a lot of new things.
Yeah, there was even like a James Bond part to it.
Yeah.
It just kind of had like influence.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Which caused the record skip in my head, but then I went with it, you know. It was one of those moments where, perhaps we could do this with Star Wars.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm.
And why not? Why not try something new? Why not explore new ground? Because Star Wars was groundbreaking at the time, and then I feel like they've relied on its familiarity since then.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have a big lightsaber fight. Let's have a big space fight. Let's have people in robes talking to each other about dire things. And it's just like movie after movie after right. movie of this. And so Last Jedi kind of gave me a little bit of hope for the series.
Yeah.
Because Rian Johnson, who was credited as written and directed by, which you don't see in a huge blockbuster movie, writer, director, auteur, having presumably complete control over the project – and taking these risks and doing these things.
Over a sacred
over
thing.
Star Wars, all things. Of a huge billion-dollar risk to Disney and something that is felt very passionately by its fans, who probably also number in the billions. It was daring. And I think there's a few missteps in the movie, for sure. I don't want to say that it's glowing and perfect. I think the plot was a little contrived. Some things seemed too obvious. Some things seemed silly. But in executing that plot to get to the themes of the movie, the themes are excellent. The character interactions are excellent. The character arcs are excellent. Mm-hmm. I think all that development and all that exploration of these characters was very well done. And it was kind of built upon what I feel to be kind of a shaky foundation of this plot, but whatever. Let it go. It's Star Wars. It's a space movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't need to be airtight. So, like, one thing I really liked about this movie, for example, when I talk about these characters and these actors and these themes, is in the very beginning of The Last Jedi, a young woman, Rose, we come to learn, is talking to Finn about, you're a hero. You're a hero of the resistance. And she's in awe of him, and he has to deal with that. At first, I was kind of like, oh, this is an interesting moment. I don't really see where it's going. But that's because I totally forgot in The Force Awakens, a movie ago, he was lying about being a hero in the resistance, a big hero. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm important to the resistance. And he's totally lying. He's never been in the resistance. And so, like, the way they kind of flipped that, where in the one case he's lying about being a hero and he has to deal with the consequences of his lie. Now he's got to deal with the consequences of the truth that he is a hero, and he has to cope with that, and he has to live up to these expectations that others have for him. And, you know, I thought that was phenomenal to examine in this movie. And then he and Rose go on a little adventure. I think there's a couple of silly lines and a couple of silly moments in their little subplot. But the relationship that they develop, the parts of their own characters that they explore are very well done. I think the script is very well written. I think the acting is phenomenal. I keep using that word phenomenal, but I do. These are great actors and actresses. And it kind of twisted everyone just a little bit. Poe's in a position where he's not super comfortable. Finn's in a position where he's not super comfortable. Rey and Kylo are kind of set up part where it's like, is she interested in the dark side? Does she feel the temptation of the dark side? And as was prefaced in The Force Awakens, is he still seduced by the light, or has he gone all the way to the dark side? And this movie explores all those themes, I think, very well, with bits of humor, with action throughout. I think it's very well executed. Absolutely. And so we're talking about this movie, and we're talking about Rian Johnson. We thought it'd be fun to watch some of his old movies, because this is kind of a trend now in Hollywood where someone does a couple of indie movies and then they're suddenly catapulted into some huge blockbuster. Mark Webb, whoever did the Amazing Spider-Man movies, which were not well received, was in a similar position where he'd never really been in charge of a blockbuster before. James Gunn, who did Slither, was suddenly put in charge of Guardians of the Galaxy and Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which I think are incredible movies.
Sure.
And that was an excellent decision. What do we think about Rian Johnson's career? Brick, for example, his first major movie, I guess, even though it's an indie movie, his first, you know, big accomplishment.
Yeah. Well, it's been years since I've seen that. I did not rewatch it in preparation for this. I do remember it very fondly. It was the kind of, like, you know, heist crime drama that opened my eyes to, oh, these stories can be told differently within a different setting, in like a high school setting. And the acting was actually incredible in that movie as well. And the tension was amazing. I don't know, Joel, you could probably speak more intelligently.
Yeah, I watched it for the first time very recently. My impressions were it was very snappy. The dialogue was just rapid fire. You really had to keep up with it, but it was also very polished. There was no raw, gritty. I mean, there are some raw and gritty emotions being shown, but they're on purpose. You know, there's nothing on camera that Rian Johnson didn't want there.
Yeah.
And everything was well scripted, well acted, well done.
Yeah.
And it was a story well told. And if there were parts of the story that, for instance, it's a high school heist crime drama involving drugs. And one would think a normal way would be like, what are the authorities, the police, parents, whatever, think about it. There's almost none.
Yeah.
There's almost no presence of that. And he just made a conscious decision. I want to examine high school kids.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have anyone interfering with that.
Right.
And almost he makes a mockery of it.
Yeah.
In one case, there is a mother, but she's not doing what you would traditionally think a mother would do. It was fascinating, and there was nothing in the way between Rian Johnson and the story he wanted to tell.
Yeah.
And I saw that in Brick, and I saw that in Star Wars, The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah. I think Brick is great. I kind of think that's how you felt in high school, is that there were no parents, there were no teachers, there was just us and them up above us somewhere, you know, pulling the strings.
It's a Charlie Brown.
Paying the rent and all that. But
voice, right.
Yeah, exactly right. It's a Charlie Brown voice. You're not really paying attention. You're only interested in what's going on. In this case, amongst the various, I don't want to say gangsters, but proxies for gangsters that are featured in this movie. So if you're interested in Rian Johnson and if you liked or didn't like Star Wars, we strongly recommend Brick at least. I think it's a great movie. It's got its own slang to it, which is important, I think, for a high school setting. But it turns out to be a lot of fun.
It was almost Shakespearean in a sense. Where you really, it was, okay, act one is over. Now this is act two. A lot of dialogue, a lot of impactful words being mentioned. Like you said, that you'd have to understand as its own dictionary.
Yeah. In a similar sense, Looper struck me as kind of Star Wars-esque in that I said it's kind of a contrived plot, but with excellent themes. Like, there's a time travel involved, and time travel movies are always messy. There's always bits that don't make sense, that don't line up, and you just have to let those go and examine the characters. In this case, you've got Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing the same character at different ages. And one is sent back in time, and they interact with each other. How do I want to say? I don't want to give it away.
It's hard to not spoil the movie,
and it's hard to explain the movie, but they interact in a variety of ways that you wouldn't expect two characters or the same character as it is to interact in this movie.
Right.
But I think it was beautifully shot, well acted again. Well acted seems to be the theme of Rian Johnson movies.
Yeah. Well, and there were a lot of twists, I think, that were even unexpected for a time travel movie. I feel like time travel is kind of the exposition of this movie, and it weighs into some of the, for lack of a better word, metaphysics of the world. Like, you know, if something happens to the past version of yourself, it's going to affect the future version of yourself. But there's also other surprises that this world that he's writing about, this science fictional world, you know, has. And that's one of the cool things about this film, is that it's real people in a fantastic world and fantastic situations. So I really liked Looper too.
And then The Brothers Bloom, unfortunately, I didn't get to see. But Tony, you saw recently?
Yeah, I saw recently. You know, that one wasn't as memorable to me just because I didn't know I had seen it. But then I watched it again and I was like, oh, okay, I'm remembering this little by little. It's Mark Ruffalo, Adrian Brody, and Rachel Weisz. So it's a great cast, but it's kind of more of a relationship movie, a lot lighter, about two brothers that they're con artists and they're, you know, playing the perfect con. But then, of course, Adrian Brody's character falls in love and with the target, like the subject of the con. So it gets to the point where it's messy. And what's really cool about this particular film is that it plays with you, the viewer, and that you're not always in on the con. So you're not sure if, similar to the characters that are being conned, you're not really sure if this is reality when someone gets shot and they end up bloody. Because that's kind of one of the most common tricks that they use. Similarly, that's used at one point in Star Wars, now that I think about it. Yeah, so it's great in that the character nuances are there again, one of the staples of Rian Johnson, but And oh my gosh, the shots and the settings in this film are absolutely beautiful. It's set and it's kind of like, you know, an international kind of intrigue, this con. So, but yeah, I recommend it if you need something light and you want to watch something that's kind of about a relationship, but kind of a con movie. I don't know. It's hard to frame also. This is just a kind of a weird movie. I think that's why it's
mildly thought producing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all of those are available at the library if you want to pick them up. The Brothers Bloom, Brick, and Looper. Quite a variety of movies for this gentleman to have. A hard-boiled high school heist, a hard sci-fi time travel, and then a lighthearted romp of
brothers and
con artist brothers, and then now Star Wars.
Right.
And not only that, but he's doing the next three Star Wars. After J.J. Abrams directs Star Wars 9, Ryan Johnson is doing a whole new trilogy, presumably with new characters. No more Darth Vader, no more Luke Skywalker, but...
What are people going to think?
I don't know. I'm
already excited. That seems cool.
I'm excited for it, I am, but it'll be... The way I think The Last Jedi was a departure from the Star Wars formula, like, we'll see how people respond to that movie, which has been interesting. We should talk about that. But then how they'll respond to the next three movies without Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher, without Ewan McGregor and Frank Oz and Alec Guinness. Because response to The Last Jedi has been interesting. It was well-reviewed on Rotten Tomatoes by critics. A very high score. If you're into Rotten Tomatoes and you're into scores, it's got a great score.
Critic score.
Great critic score.
Right.
And then a poor audience score. And there's been discussion online and on Twitter and on online petitions that there's a core of people who really don't like The Last Jedi. And that's kind of fascinating to me because... Like I said, I didn't think it was perfect. I thought this was wrong. I thought that was wrong, you know, but whatever. I still had a good time at the movie. Mm-hmm. I still think the acting was very well done. I think the themes of the movie outweigh the plot annoyances of the movie. But there are some people who apparently the online petition with 20,000 signatures asks that Disney remove this movie from canon and make a new Star Wars 8 to put in its place, where Luke Skywalker is different. They didn't like Luke Skywalker in this movie. I don't know. How do you feel about Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi?
I thought he was introduced as totally, well, not totally different, but transformed from what we knew. But it showed not just him having grown from previous films, but even throughout the course of this film, he develops, which is just really interesting. It's like you really get to travel with, for another adventure with Luke Skywalker, which is just pretty incredible. I mean, so I think they really nailed it. It also, it introduced flaws to, in the past, maybe he had been a little hot-headed to want to go and, in Empire Strikes Back, maybe he wanted to confront Vader too soon, and that's what, you know, cost him his arm and all that. I think he was actually given kind of more of a deep character flaw in this, and that was really interesting, so.
And an awareness of his own deep character flaw.
Yeah.
That was what really got me, when people... I agree. In the original 4-3-6, he had a penchant for, you know, he's always yelling at Yoda saying, I'm ready. Tell him I'm ready. He's not, obviously. And now he knows that he doesn't want to do this and he knows why he doesn't want to do it. And he's very well aware of the conflict going on within him versus ignoring it and going forward in the previous movies. And I think that's a great development for him. And I think that I don't know what people want Skywalker to do.
Yeah.
Where does that character from the 4-3-6 movies, where does that end up? I mean, I think 8, like you said, nailed it.
I think this is a payoff from Empire Strikes Back. I think when Yoda tells Luke, Luke says, I'm not afraid, and Yoda says, you will be. I think this is finally the moment.
Yeah, shivers. That's great.
When Luke is finally afraid of his own power and the power of the Force and what it can do.
The power he sees in others, right?
Yeah, and what it can destroy. In addition to, you know, he wanted to be a great warrior. Well, he had that moment. Now it's past. Now what? He kind of doesn't know what to do. And maybe he screws up or maybe he doesn't. It's not entirely clear. But he feels the consequences of that. And he exhibits pain for those consequences. And I think that's great for just, you know, 4-6. I mean, he was a lot of fun, but he was just kind of like, you know, let's go, let's do this, let's do that, let's charge in, let's, I'll be fine. And it's about time he failed, and he failed spectacularly, and he really took it to heart. You know, that's what happens to people in life, in the world, is that sometimes you fail, and, you know, it's not that easy to overcome it. It's not that easy to move on. And Luke, I think, struggled for a long time and then, you know, had to confront. He couldn't run away and hide for the rest of his life. Again, that's a great theme. That's a great character. It was a great acting job. I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, since we're on that topic, I think that there's a scene at the beginning of the movie of The Last Jedi that takes the end of The Force Awakens, the gravity, and the and it just kind of turns it on its head.
Yes.
And it just kind of says, okay, that movie's done. We're doing this one now.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a fantastic way to begin the film.
Yeah.
It is a fantastic way to introduce Luke Skywalker and how he feels, where he is, what he thinks of the Force and the Jedi, and what he thinks about a new apprentice, all summed up in a 2-second scene. You know, I think that was great. Some people don't like it. Again, on the internet, I don't know, people don't like it. But I laughed out loud and instantly loved this movie when that happened.
And there were points of the movie where movies made in the late 70s and early 80s are different than movies made today.
Yes. Yeah.
And Star Wars is in a unique capacity to be almost the same, I'm using air quotes, the same movie than as it is now, but in different time periods. So they have to put in different things to almost relate to the movie watchers of today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that people who put those scenes in, for there are some comedic elements that people may or may not have disagreed with. Mm-hmm. And they, oh, how could you do that for a Star Wars film? I thought it was a brilliant way to update the movies.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a terrific moments in the film.
Yeah.
To me, I kind of relate it to the way that Thor 3 was also like, it's aware of the fact that you're watching a superhero movie, so might as well do things in a lighthearted way and allow the actors to express themselves, and in this case, allow the writer to put in these moments of just exposing kind of the goofiness of this world. Because Ewoks were goofy too, and so were, you know, looking at the giant creature that Luke runs into in the cave of Hoth. Is it Wampa?
Yeah.
Right. That thing looks kind of silly today. But, like, I mean, in the day and age, it was a little scary, but it was also kind of cool and kooky and weird, you know? So I think it's just updating what was successful in the past, too.
DC should take note
of
that, you know, style.
Because
I think the lack of that is what makes. And we had previous discussion.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things I was missing.
Yeah. I think the casino scene in The Last Jedi is, like, the new version of the cantina in A New Hope. Weird aliens doing weird things. And
that are somewhat normal.
Funny voices and weird faces. And, I think it's a great movie. I think it was a big risk. I think that risk was worth it. I'm not so excited for 9, but I'm really excited for Rian Johnson's next 3 movies. I think I'm on board with whatever ideas he's got and direction he's going to take it.
I agree. The one other thing, though, about the Star Wars movies is that they're owned by Disney. And the saturation factor has – I walked into a Petco the other day, and I was faced with dog costumes of the Imperial Guard. And I was just – almost anywhere you go, you see Star Wars. Love it or hate it.
Yeah.
It's saturated into your life. In my case, I just accept it and enjoy it watching.
I can't imagine someone who doesn't like Star Wars. I can't imagine their life for the 3 months leading up to an episode 8 or an episode 7, where it's just commercials on TV, previews at the movie theater, but it's also like your cup at Taco Bell has Star Wars characters on it, right? You can't get away from Star Wars.
Or if you drive, heaven help you if you drive a Nissan Rogue.
Yeah.
You know, but, but having the perspective of watching my children watch the original movies for the first time, that was a moment that stands out in my head as a parent of just having them share the same moment. That's what Star Wars can bring to all of us, is the story well told. And I hope it continues.
Yeah.
And I think Rian Johnson's a good person to take it forward.
I think so, too. So that's Star Wars The Last Jedi. We like it. We hope you like it. If you like Star Wars, come check out Star Wars anything at the library. We got books. We got movies. We got CDs, soundtracks. We
got graphic novels.
I don't know if there's a part of the library untouched by Star Wars, to tell you the truth. We probably got picture books down on the second floor.
Mm-hmm. Attack of the Clones. Uh-huh. Yeah, right. Or the Clone Wars, I'm sorry. You know, the kids.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the cartoons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Rebels.
Yeah, right. And I think when we were doing one of the other podcasts that we recorded, uh-huh. I do recommend both of the... I watched the animated Clone Wars, but I recommend Rebels. It's a kids' show, but yeah. It's the modern Disney after Disney bought Star Wars. I actually recommend that one if you guys haven't seen it. It's very good.
Fourth season or something like that?
I think it's in its fourth season.
I've seen more than my fair share of those episodes.
So yeah, come check out some Star Wars stuff. Or if you don't like Star Wars, come check out some Rian Johnson stuff, because we've got those three movies as well. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Joel. And that's it for the Pint and Click podcast. See you next time.